Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for tuning in. Hendrik here, Red Ice TV. We're doing a live broadcast here today. Thank you for joining us. If you're joining us on Facebook or Twitter, StreamMe, or what else? Is that it? Yeah, I think that's it for now. Of course, not YouTube yet. Just have maybe a couple of weeks left. I forget the date again until we can live broadcast to YouTube. But nonetheless, wherever you're joining us from, thank you so much. If you're maybe checking out the archived version later on YouTube or our websites. We're doing this kind of an extra little broadcast here today. Because we have some urgent developing news from Greg Johnson over at Countercurrents. Amazon has continued their book purge, and I thought we should bring him on and highlight this, as many others have done already, which is very good, of course. We always have to bring attention to this when this happens and just talk about this and continue putting pressure and make people aware just what it kind of climate that is that we're operating with and what we're up against when it comes to getting our messages out. So this is kind of breaking new stories here. It unfolded, I think, from yesterday. Why don't you share the details with us, Greg, and get us up to speed in terms of what it is that happened. Thank you for joining us, by the way. Good to have you here.
Well, thank you for having me on. I really appreciate it. It's been a while. And the situation started on Sunday. I got a message from a customer, a Countercurrents fan, who said that my manifesto was in his Amazon basket, and when he went to pay for it, it had been disappeared. And the page, the Kindle page, the hardcover page, the paperback page, they were all taken down. So I scrolled through my messages on my phone and found a notice from Amazon saying that they had removed it because of unspecified violations of their content rules. So I looked at their rules, and it's fairly clear that what's happening doesn't actually even fit the Amazon rules, as Orwellian as they might be. Amazon does have rules allowing them to ban content for being offensive, but they explicitly say that those rules don't apply to books, for one thing. So they don't apply to my books, obviously. And I wrote to Amazon, and they just sent me back another message saying the same thing, that I had somehow, without specifying exactly how, violated some rules about content. It was obviously political. So anyway, I wrote an article about this and put it up. It's at Countercurrents now. It's about the ban. And I looked at various things that were still available on Amazon. The White Nationalist Manifesto is not on Amazon, but the Communist Manifesto is available on Amazon.
Of course it is.
The world's richest capitalist will sell you multiple editions of the Communist Manifesto. You can get it gift-wrapped. You can get it with free two-day Prime delivery. That's Jeff Bezos' superpower, right? Getting these things to you very fast. And yet my manifesto is not available. There are various Black Nationalist Manifestos available. There are terrorist handbooks available, statements from various terrorists like Osama bin Laden and Ulrike Meinhof, Che Guevara, Leon Trotsky, Osama bin Laden, et cetera, et cetera.
What about Bill Ayers? Is he? He has some writing on there, I would assume.
Well, I'm sure he's available. The Unabomber's manifesto is available in multiple editions, which does sort of create a moral hazard when you think about it, because the guy sent package bombs that killed three people and injured 23 others to get his manifesto published. And the New York Times published it, and then it became available in various print editions that Amazon sells. So that's rather astonishing. People who commit murder or advocate mass murder, create the conditions that have led to mass murder, they can have their books sold on Amazon.com. I didn't do nothing, right? And I'm just a philosopher who's writing a book about why white people need to be treated equally under international law, and that has been removed.
The biggest taboo, Greg. Let's face it.
Yeah,
the biggest taboo today. Advocating for white well-being, white not being discriminated against and suppressed as white people. You know.
Exactly. So anyway, I sort of braced myself, thinking that this is probably not over, And then yesterday I got the word that I was actually on a live stream with Millennial Woes when the word came through that I think 8 more Countercurrents titles were banned. And then I went on a live stream with Neil White Guilt and The Great Order. And during that time, several more were banned. So now a total of 16 Countercurrents titles have been removed from Amazon.com. The list is varied. It represents more than a quarter of our books that we published so far. And it's concerning. So I'll read you the list if you'll bear with me. First of all, they removed my books. I can't even find information on my own website. Yeah, so New Right versus Old Right by Greg Johnson, My Truth, Justice, and a Nice White Country, My In Defense of Prejudice. The Kindle has been removed, but the print edition pages haven't been removed. North American New Right Volume 1 has been removed in all formats, but for some reason Volume 2 is still available. My two Trevor Lynch White Nationalist Guides to the Movies have been removed. F. Roger Devlin's Sexual Utopian Power is gone. Jonathan Bowden's Western Civilization Bites Back and Extremists are gone. Michael Polignano's Taking Your Own Side, James J. O'Meara's The Homo and the Negro. Only the second edition is gone. There's still a page out for the first edition, which is out of print. Spencer Quinn's novel, White Like You, two titles by Savitri Devi, and Time Rolls On in Defiance, and Erman Vinson's Some Thoughts on Hitler and Other Essays. So in addition to the White Nationalist Manifesto, all of these are now gone to various degrees from Amazon. Also, I got word that 4 of Jared Taylor's titles, including White Identity and If We Do Nothing, as well as 2 edited books, Face to Face with Race and A Race Against Time, have been removed in the same purge. Yeah, and now I've gotten word that some of Black House Publishing's titles have been removed.
Who was that? But remind me, I just can't place it. Who was behind that?
I forget the guy who runs it.
I've come across it. Yeah, I just don't recall who it was. But anyway.
He publishes a lot of Kerry Bolton's titles.
Okay. Yeah.
So those books are being targeted as well. So this is not, I think, some renegade SJW employee, some blue-haired, strong, independent woman who's just sneakily removing books. I think it's a systematic thing. They have teamed up with the SPLC and so forth, and they're going about it very systematically to deplatform us. It's concerning because Amazon has mostly resisted this kind of stuff. They deep-sixed a bunch of Holocaust revisionist titles a year or two ago. And I guess that wasn't enough. So they're back for more. And of course, the underlying assumption of these attempts to censor and prevent people from finding information is that the reason why multiculturalism isn't working out as planned is because people like me and Jared Taylor are out there whispering in people's ears and convincing them to behave badly and not get with the program. So if Jared Taylor and I can be deplatformed and silenced, then multiculturalism will suddenly start working. Now that's totally delusional and it's going to be totally ineffective because of that. We are not the reason why multiculturalism isn't working. We're just the alarm bell. We're the early warning that's letting people know that it's not working and why it's not working. But the main reason why multiculturalism isn't working is that it's not based on human nature. Racial and ethnic diversity in the same society are not a source of happiness. They're a source of tension and conflict and alienation and often outright war and bloodshed and genocide. We're trying to prevent that. They're trying to stop us from preventing that, yep, and therefore promoting it. And My answer to this is basically, look, these people are not going to stop the problems of multiculturalism and diversity. And I might have to sit back and be silenced while all of these terrible consequences unfold, but people's consciousness is still going to be raised by the experience of multiculturalism, white dispossession, and
it's
so forth.
It's inevitable. It's unstoppable at this rate.
Yeah, and really the only question that the system has is basically, do they take the battery out of the smoke alarm, or do they finally start listening to the alarm bells, the warning signs that what they're doing is producing a catastrophe? The trouble with people who are essentially narcissistic, like our brittle, delusional leaders, is that they are more concerned with maintaining a positive self-image than actually behaving as decent human beings and producing decent outcomes. And therefore, to preserve their positive self-image, they lie and they suppress the truth. And that's essentially what's going on here. It's not going to be effective. It's just going to make the inevitable explosion that much more surprising to them when it actually happens, and that much more unfocused and just purely destructive than if we can speak out, warn people, try and give people a deeper understanding of what's going on, and put forward sensible, humane options, alternatives to the present system. They're not going to stop conflict, but they are stopping people from finding out why it's happening and what can be done to stop it and what the alternatives are. It's just gross irresponsibility. But this is what happens when people are delusional and just keep doubling down on their delusions. They can't be corrected. The reason why we need free speech in every society, even a society that we might want to set up ourselves, is because leaders can be wrong and they need to know it. And people in positions of power can punish the bearers of bad news. And that's why we need a right to speak truth to power. That's why it's important to protect this kind of speech. Because if you don't have essential information about catastrophic failures and problems that are coming to pass because of your policies, things are just going to be worse. We're trying to prevent that. They're trying to shut us down. And I'm afraid that, you know, if unheeded, things are just going to be worse. But whatever happens, their preferences, their preferred utopia is not in the cards. It's not going to happen.
No, that's correct, Greg. And let's talk about the organization behind this. Do you think it's the usual suspects, the SPLC, maybe ADL pressure groups? Is it something else?
It's that. It's just that.
Yeah.
Put it this way: everybody who's involved with this might not be on the payroll of the ADL or the SPLC, but they're certainly plugged into the one big leftist hive mind that is pushing.
You have a couple
pushing
of more,
these censorship policies.
You have Media Matters. What else is that? There's a Right Wing Watch. Maybe there are a couple of those, but they're, as you said, they're basically tied into the same kind of incestuous group. You know, that keep lobbying for this, and they have some on the periphery. We should mention as well, Greg, that they have these people that disguise themselves as journalists, right? That actually write pieces in Huffington Post or Vox or even Verge or Mike, whatever the hell it was called before it went under. That basically using their position as a journalist at these outlets to disseminate their activism, which is to complain on political perspectives and ideologies that they don't agree with, as a kind of a pressure. I get Daily Beast, we should mention as well. They do a lot of this kind of stuff. Lobbying mm-hmm. for the removal. I think we've had several on the Daily Beast now written about our YouTube channel, Red Ice TV's YouTube channel, that it needs to be removed because I think the argument is, I want to get your take on this too, because as we saw, they like Amazon, they are okay with obviously terrorists and things like this, just not white advocates, right? But their argument, I think, is that it's because we address these issues and talk about them, I've heard this argument, that it will lead to violence. Now, I haven't seen this like proven or actually established in any way. But that's usually what we hear back. What would you say to that in terms of if we, I mean, you kind of addressed it a little bit, but if we would just shut up, all of these issues would go away. That's not really viable, is it?
No, it's not really viable. They can point to people like Dylann Roof and so forth as examples of how people who see these problems can go violent. Anders Breivik saw these problems and got violent. We are not responsible for this violence. White advocates are not responsible for this violence. The people who are responsible for the violence that is caused by multiculturalism are the people who promote multiculturalism. Plain and simple. And multiculturalism will inevitably create alienation and tension and social violence. And so when somebody like Anders Breivik goes off or Dylann Roof goes off, that proves the truth of our outlook. It is not a refutation of our views. It is a proof of our views. It is a symptom of the problem that we are diagnosing. So I simply think we have to throw it right back at them. They are ultimately responsible for all the negative consequences of multiculturalism, including the odd right-wing nut who goes off and pushes back. There's far more anti-white violence than there is white violence in this system. And of course, they overlook that. They downplay violence against whites, and they will play up white violence because that they want to push the narrative that whites are simply a per se evil group. The rest of the people in the society are just these peaceful, grazing, didn't do nothings who are victims of white people. It's just not true. So yeah, the press is full of liars, in short. And the basic lie that they push is that multiculturalism leads to happiness and that it's only people like us exercising our free speech rights that cause the violence that is really caused by multiculturalism. And believe me, there's going to be violence caused by multiculturalism whether we're out there or not. The reason why we're out speaking about this is we're trying to prevent this.
Yeah, and make people aware that this is one of the side effects, intentional or not, by the multicultural pipe dream, right? It happens in proximity. You push people together that don't have, they're incompatible culturally and racially, we can argue as well. And in that mix, when you do that and force people together like that, you'll have problems, basically. And this is not going to just go away one day. I think it's the opposite. I think we're seeing an increase of all these things. But I think this, though, I think that it is evident that obviously we are putting the finger on something. We're touching the sensitive nerves, if you will, the nerve endings of the establishment and the globalist. If we were crackpots that didn't have anything to come with, no arguments that made sense, why would they even put down this much effort to try to block and censor? Because it's not only Amazon. We've talked about this many times, but if we do have any newcomers out there joining us, then it needs to be pointed out that it's all over the place. It's ubiquitous in these mainstream, I guess we can call them, social media platforms, right? Facebook, YouTube, even Instagram. It didn't begin with Alex Jones, but we have to say that there was a big case when he was deplatformed from pretty much the majority of these social media networks, effectively over the course of a day or two, all of them at the same time, right? It's kind of a collusion that occurred. And in the wake of
collusion,
this,
yeah.
Absolutely. And in the wake of this, you know, guys, we've seen a tremendous effort to push back and remove content. And at this stage, I want to mention, too, it isn't only white nationalist messages or nationalist messages or patriot or conservative voices that are being censored. It is expanding. I saw that conspiracy theorist David Icke was barred from entering into Australia here a couple of days ago. They're shutting down meetings with people because leftists are out protesting. And so the establishment is fearful that, you know, if we just silence the people that are causing the protests, right, then the problem will go away. They're kowtowing to these leftist groups, basically, right? But it's ubiquitous. It's occurring all over. Richie Allen, another... he had a big YouTube channel. He was more alternative, kind of into the conspiracy field a little bit. He's had his YouTube channel removed and countless others, you know, Greg. So it's like anything that's basically not pushing the mainstream view, right, and just is totally pro-establishment, I think they're going to seek to silence that at some point because it's just too difficult for them to have these pesky dissidents bringing attention to inconvenient facts.
Right, exactly. If 30 years ago, if the establishment in the West were thinking, if they had far-sighted people who were thinking ahead, they would have looked at the internet and they would have seen it as a mortal threat to their power because they had a total lock on everything. In America, we had three commercial TV networks. We had a few major news services. Basically, every newspaper's content was being provided from news services coming from the central points. The society was basically one where people were increasingly isolated from real world relationships, sitting at home, having propaganda beamed into their heads from a centralized location. The level of mind control that they enjoyed in the post-World War II era up to basically the beginning of the internet is really astonishing. And they let that slip away from them and they regret it bitterly. They regret it bitterly, but they can't really figure out what to do with it because the web is not the kind of thing that can be controlled, really. It's inherently decentralized. And they especially screwed up when social media was invented because social media allows us to establish relationships with one another, right? Rather than be isolated and just have propaganda beamed into our heads from New York and Los Angeles. We can share information with one another, and that's very dangerous. So they are trying to get a lid on this, but they really can't. And this is the big white pill that I've been pushing for some time. The establishment can't stop us because the only way to stop us from getting our message out and creating alternative social networks is to shut down the internet entirely. But the global economic system is now wrapped up with the internet. It's like Sauron in that ring, right? He put the ring on and his substance is now tied to it. He can't live without it anymore. They can't live without the internet, and yet the internet is going to kill them. And they're in a position analogous to that of, say, a heroin addict who's addicted to this junk, and they know it's going to kill them when they think rationally, but they very few social very few heroin addicts ever kick it, right? Even though they know it's going to kill them, very few of them ever manage to stop. And I think that's what the establishment's position is right now. And this, I think, is part of the reason why they're essentially losing their shit. They're hysterical because Trump happened, Brexit happened, Salvini, Orban, national populism is on the rise. This was not part of the plan. Right. This was not part of the program. These were the things that were not supposed to happen. And they've been coping and deluding themselves by saying, oh, it's just the 2008 recession, or, oh, this is just random, unpredictable, charismatic politicians, or, oh, this is the migrant crisis. But we're going to get this back under control, right? And we're going to keep moving towards globalization somehow. Yeah. Well, it's not going to happen. So they're quite hysterical. They're quite hysterical, and while they feel like they have some power, they feel their power is slipping away. And when you feel your power slipping away, you want to use it.
You get scared. You get frustrated, yeah. Right? And and because if they were, this is what's so interesting about this dynamic, that if they were smarter, maybe I gave them too much credit. And they, sure, it's different entities, and they kind of, it's nebulous. They push back and forth in terms of what direction to move in. But there is a general trend, right, of the establishment towards globalization, right? The liberal world order, as I like to refer to it as. it's moving in that direction, right? But if they were a little bit more level-headed and a little bit more cooler, they would go about this in a different way, and they would be kind of more calm or more directed, not so emotional and not so hysterical to a certain extent, because we have to mention that they are effectively turning this into forbidden fruit on top of it, right? I mean, and that historically, that has never worked. An oppressive government system, which is what we have, where certain opinions just are outlawed. If you begin to ban, if you begin to do these things and create more and more dissidents, and if this keeps expanding in this way, people are wanting, they're going to fight back. And I think that our demographic, therefore, is just going to keep growing, just for the sake that they are just not smart enough to look out for free speech. They would have, could have gone about it a different way, but maybe, I don't know, what do you think? Maybe I gave them too much credit. Maybe it's not that thought out. What do you think?
I think they're hysterical. I do think they're hysterical. I think there are some brains behind this, but there are very few cool heads. And I don't think, for instance, in institutions like the Democratic Party in the United States, there are cool elders in control. I just don't think that's happening. One of the copes that the left has is the idea that the national populism is the last gasp of old white men who are going to die off and be replaced by tolerant millennials and non-whites. Well, we can see how that's not really true because, some of these Trump voters are dying off, for instance. They're old and they're dying off. But what's happening right now with the Democratic field that they're clamoring to get their hats in the ring to run for president? You have crazy-eyed ultra-leftists clamoring for things like race-based reparations. And so even though some of the old Trump supporters are dying off, the left is overreaching. They are hysterical. They are crazy. And they're going to drive people in the center towards the right. And so they are, if they just acted cool, if they just found some white centrist guy, like, I can't even think of any white centrist Democrats anymore, but if they found a kind of bland white centrist Democrat and put him up and got him in office, all they have to do is wait. Right. All they have to do is wait. But the trouble is that they're so eager, they're so hysterical, they're so pushy that they are going to create a new constituency that might put Trump back into office in 2020. So there's kind of a self-reinforcing quality about this drift to the right. The leftist reaction to it is creating more people who are going to move to the right. So I think that this is a very interesting thing that we're going to be seeing. Ultimately, though, I think that the days of democracy in America are numbered. And the reason why I think democracy's days in America are numbered, it is very simple. Liberal democracy is a system where different factions in a society basically trade power amongst themselves, amongst one another. And it's really only possible to do that, to relinquish power, if you feel like you're relinquishing it to people who are basically members of your own society, your own group, and that they're not a tribe, a foreign tribe, or a coalition of foreign tribes that are implacably hostile to your very existence. Nobody in their right mind relinquishes power to an alien tribe that's implacably hostile to their existence. And white Americans are coming to realize that the Democratic Party, the left in America, is not the same people. It's a bunch of very different people glued together by some incredibly crazy people who are hostile to our existence. And at that point, at the point of realizing that, white Americans are going to be saying, look, I don't care what happens in the next election. We can never cede power to these crazies. We can't risk it. And that means that the people transition of power is coming to an end. That means that democracy in America is coming to an end. And it's the left It's broken democracy in America because they're so crazy. And Trump really was the guy who sort of got the mask of sanity to fall away from these people and got them to reveal themselves for who they are.
Yeah, interesting point, Greg. I just wanted to sneak in there quick. Do you think that would have pushed this hard if Trump didn't get in? Let's say Hillary won, right? I don't think that the chain of events that we've seen would have happened, actually.
No, I don't think so either. Hillary Clinton is an evil person, but like her husband, she's actually kind of a banal form of evil. The Clintons were just phenomenally corrupt and vain people. I mean, Bill Clinton was objectively a centrist, right? He was a centrist and really only concerned with enriching himself and certain people around him. And Hillary Clinton is the same way. They're not left-wing radicals. They're just greedy, kind of basically jumped-up third-world kleptocrat types.
And this is why they changed positions, right? Remember Hillary? She talked about a strong border. She was wasn't she the one who made the comments about not savages, but it was some. Yeah, I forget the comment now, but it was basically like a really racial term, right? It was even used against her during the election and stuff. But she was paid by the liberals, right? That agenda works better, so let's do that now. It's like they're just empty shells. They're just dolls, puppets, ready to be pushed around for the benefit of the globalists, you know?
Yeah. Basically, you know, they're not far left. They're centrist. What they are is far globalist. You know, they're ultra globalist. And what is the globalist agenda? Well, the globalist agenda is basically the agenda of a degenerate left-wing oligarchy. It's an ultra-capitalistic but left-wing elite, and that's what the Clintons are a part of. They are part of a left-wing oligarchy. The establishment wants more globalization, more and more decadence, basically. What the people want is the opposite. They want nationalism. They want government interventionism on the side of the working class and the middle class. And they want a social conservatism. That's what national populism is. It's nationalism, social conservatism, and an interventionist government. And the establishment wants the exact opposite. And no matter who gets elected, the establishment has so much power that they tend to get what they want, even with Trump, right? Trump got in on a national populist platform, but what has he done? He's given the oligarchy tax cuts, but he hasn't built the wall.
That's right.
Yeah. They got what they wanted, but we don't get what we want. That's the whole point of modern democracy. The whole point of modern democracy is not giving the people what they want. This is why Brexit is being handled or mishandled this way. The immediate assumption after Brexit happened amongst everybody in the establishment is, how can we stop this? How can we frustrate the will of the people? That's the system that we have today throughout the West. And this is why eventually I think there's going to be a revolution, or many revolutions in many countries. And these revolutions will be, violent and sudden and terrifying if dissent is suppressed, or they can be peaceful if people are allowed to dissent and organize and persuade people that it's time for a fundamental change. It's time to actually respect the will of the people for a change.
Yeah, it's interesting too. Amazon, I mean, obviously they're massive, massive company at this point. Jeff Bezos, one of the richest. Is he the richest man alive right now? I think he is, right? He passed Carlos Slim, didn't he? Well, we could talk about their products for a little bit too. It is interesting that, you know, it started as a bookstore, an online bookstore, right? But the fact that they have chosen for their product line names such as Kindle and Fire TV, right? It's kind of indicative of the fact that they were involved in some kind of burning or book burning. This is obviously the modern version of book burning, but it's also another layer to it, which is dangerous because so much today is digitized as well. And now we have a company where basically everything is run through. It's through the free market. It's ascended to become a monolith and a monopoly, basically in the field. There are alternatives. But due to the fact that they make so much money, they are the ones who can compete in terms of, you know, pushing the prices down. So we've handed all of this over to a certain extent, and everyone who buys at Amazon, they fund this, and it's not just books anymore. It's a huge store. They have artificial intelligence. They have algorithms that study purchase behaviors on your accounts and what you do. They effectively know if you've had a baby or not, depending on your purchases, and they can send you not only like directed advertisements. There's much more nefarious things that can be used with the access that Amazon and some of these other big platforms too get from just mapping and tracking, you know, human behavior basically. So Amazon is an unscrupulous company, which is just ruthless in their attitude. But I think that this is not going to last, you know, Greg, in the long run. It's short term, yes, all of this that we're seeing with the banning and the blocking and the shadow banning and the termination of accounts, etc., is very detrimental to the people that do this. But as you say, one, it's unstoppable because reality is moving in the direction that we're pointing at. And then second of all, I think also people will be continued to be fed up with it. And in the long term, this is not going to benefit them, I think.
Yeah, I agree. I cannot in good conscience ever buy from Amazon again. After the initial ban of my manifesto, I thought, well, I'll give them the benefit of the doubt and hope that maybe this can be rectified. But when they banned 15 more titles, and I started hearing about other people's works being banned, I realized I cannot in good conscience ever buy another thing at Amazon.com. So I went onto Amazon and I canceled all of my open orders, all the pre-orders. I will not renew my Prime and so forth. When Amazon combined freedom of choice and maximum freedom of choice, they basically would stock every book that came out. Right. When they maximized freedom of choice with convenience, and when they had algorithms and things that allowed you to basically expand your intellectual horizons by discovering new things. When somebody buys a book by Jared Taylor and they look down the page and they see people who bought this title also bought Greg Johnson, The White Nationalist Manifesto, or Western Civilization Bites Back by Jonathan Bowden, and people click on those and discover new things, that opens minds. My mind, my intellectual life has been enormously benefited from Amazon.com. I've discovered many, many books, and I've read the reviews, things like that. It was great. I had a 20-year relationship with Amazon, a very positive relationship. But now that they are combining censorship with convenience, right? Now that they are the world's largest book banner, I cannot in good conscience continue to support them. You know, to choose convenience over freedom, basically that's the definition of Nietzsche's The Last Man, right? And that's not me. And nobody in good conscience should make that choice. So boycott Amazon.
Absolutely. You know,
cancel your accounts.
Exactly. Yeah.
And explain why. Explain why you're doing it.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. It has to be done. People have to fight back. And again, it's they're going to continue. And these pressure groups, they're not gonna stop. As you said, they don't know how to. They can't, because even the smallest things, which today doesn't bother them, they will be as specks in their eye when all these other ones have been removed. Right. It's just gonna grow on them. The lesser offensive things are going to be, you know, going from microaggressions to large aggressions, or whatever you want to call that, to make an analogy, right? It's just going to grow on them. And let's keep in mind, too, that these organizations, SPLC, I show the headline here, of course. This is not a surprise, but we have SPLC basically working with YouTube, lobbying them, telling them what to remove. They're in their latest spat, it's about what they call conspiracy theories, right? They're going to be stopping recommending these videos. Mm-hmm. What was great about the platform, and this could be extended to what you just said about Amazon, the fact that you see related books, right? This purchase also, it is a wormhole, a rabbit hole that you go down in that sense. And the same was true for YouTube, that you look at this one topic and it's interesting, and you're lined up with a bunch of other ones. That is and was what was great about these platforms, the way you could discover this in conventional you know, knowledge, basically, when it comes to YouTube, in that sense. And that was so great. That's what built the platform. Now they're basically doing a 180 and reversing all that. They're turning to cable TV now. That's their new product. You can go to YouTube to watch MSNBC and CNN or CBS, Fox, you know. And it's like that is not going to last in the long run. Again, it's hurts in the short term, but in the long run, there are going to be alternatives, Greg. They are going to show up, and they're going to be willing and able, I think, to serve up the kind of content that people want, because ultimately, you know, that's what built these places, you know?
Yeah, that's what built them. Choice built these huge platforms. And they think, you know, every time, years ago, I was living in Atlanta, and I would notice this pattern. That's when I first noticed it. A Thai restaurant would open up, and I liked Thai food, and so I would go to the restaurant, and often they were really, really good. And they would open up, and they'd put really good food out. And then as soon as they established a clientele, suddenly the quality of the food would start declining precipitously. You know, they would get people locked in, and then they would see how far they could bastardize their products and still keep these stupid customers coming back again and again. Well, you know, I remember this one restaurant where I was so offended that the food was so disgusting that I just walked out and didn't pay the bill. And I looked back, and there was a whole restaurant full of happy diners eating slop, you know. And that's the way YouTube and Amazon became giants. They became giants because they gave people alternatives. They gave people choices. They gave people a world they could explore and expand their minds. And now they're shutting it down, and they think they can keep these audiences. And there are a lot of idiots, a lot of complacent idiots that'll keep eating the slop that they put out. But people with searching minds are going to find other platforms, and they can't stop other platforms from popping up. Eventually they will pop up. Now, one thing I would like to see, and I think this would be one of the greatest things that could happen in the United States, is massive legislation to regulate these giant tech companies.
Absolutely.
To basically say, yep, the First Amendment applies to the private sector. I would like to see basically a ban on politically correct terms of service and employment throughout the entire U.S. economy. That would be a game changer. Basically, right now, the power of the left is in the corporations. Again, you know, this Jonathan Bowden talked about this. He said, we are ruled by a left-wing oligarchy. The left controls us through private corporations now. And we have to stop that. We have to root these people out ruthlessly and basically force them to respect our freedom.
Yeah, absolutely. I totally agree with that. And it is coming. It is going to happen. I wanted to point out before we move on here, I'm not going to hold you too long, but there are a couple of things I'd like to cover. And one of them is the attitudes of SPLC, what the intentions are for those that have any questions about this, of why they're doing this and why they consider it to be so important to shut down voices that that do bring attention to these issues. And again, this organization, together with many others, they're making money on this phony industry of what they call hate. And we've been served up a couple of good examples, I should say, recently here with the Smollett hate hoax crime, of course, and things like this, right? But they continue to rest assured that it's still on the growth right now. They don't even take into account the fact that the organizations that report these hate crimes have quadrupled in the last couple of years. And also, things that was considered to be just crime in the past now has a caveat to it, right? And it can be inserted into a different category, which is the extension to that. But I don't know if you saw this. I'm sure you did, but it was interesting in the documentary Alt-Right, the Age of Rage or the Rise of Hate or something? I forget what it was.
It's Age of Rage, yeah. Age of Rage. I actually reviewed it at Countercurrents and at uns.com. Yeah, that is a surprisingly good movie. We could do a whole podcast or about that if you wanted someday.
Let's have you back. And of course, I don't know if you see the screen, but I wanted to focus on is the fact that Mark Potok in his office, he's one of the head guys at SPLC, He has a little note tracking and mapping the decline of white population in America.
Yeah. Now, if diversity is just a matter of making us all richer, why map white decline in particular? Why focus on something like that? Why focus on the decline of one racial group? Why not focus on the rise of other groups? Obviously, the agenda of the SPLC is anti-white. It's not pro-diversity, it's anti-white. And I think that this is something that's just remarkable. This filmmaker didn't know what he was doing, I think, when he got that in the frame. I think he's clearly a leftist. He's partially non-white. He's a partial South Asian Indian descent, and certainly doesn't identify as white. So he did us a great favor, though, by capturing that in Mark Potok's home office.
He doesn't leave many questions to what the agenda is and what the goal is, Greg.
Yeah. I would love to have Mark Potok deposed under oath and asked what this means.
Yeah,
I think it would be very interesting to hear his answer to that question.
Yeah, I mean, again, according to the Genocide Convention, right, by the United Nations, even planning and creating a condition that causes a decline in the birth rates of a population is actually considered genocide.
Yeah,
and this would certainly qualify.
Oh yeah, exactly. This is definitely monitoring and basically a genocidal product, a project of changing America's demographics to the disfavor of the white population. Now, the core argument of my White Nationalist Manifesto focuses on white genocide and argues that white nationalism is the only way to stop white genocide, that just as the United Nations, just as international law recognizes that genocide is a crime, the principle of national self-determination is also enshrined in international law. We need to resist genocide against whites by establishing autonomous white homelands. That's the whole argument of my book. And Jeff Bezos doesn't want that argument in your hands. It's fine for you to read the Unabomber Manifesto and the Communist Manifesto and boatloads, truckloads of anti-white books, right? It's fine for them to sell the SCUM Manifesto, which stands for Society to Cut Up Men, but not F. Roger Devlin's book on the failure, the catastrophe of the sexual revolution called Sexual Utopia in Power. This is just such rank hypocrisy. They are taking away your choice as a consumer because they want to take away your future as a race. That's the agenda here.
Yeah, and note too here that he mapped specifically 1965, right, which was a seminal year because that's when the Hart-Celler Act was passed and the immigration laws in America was changed, right? So they are very adamant, he's very adamant or very, it's noteworthy to mention that he tracks this as a significant development, a kind of a milestone, I guess, that the SPLC and Mark Potok would see this at.
Oh, yeah, definitely. That was when America basically abandoned its commitment to maintaining a white supermajority. And that was a decision lobbied for by the organized Jewish community for decades. They fought against the 1924 Immigration Reform Act for decades, and as soon as they lost, well, they just they started lobbying to overturn it, and it took them 40 years to overturn it. And the goal was to basically destroy laws that would maintain a white supermajority in the United States.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. It's unbelievable that it's happening, and it's unbelievable the climate and the pressure that they've managed to create. We're basically just also taking a defensive, I like to point this out, a defensive position against the crimes that are being done against us, against the will of the people too. No Western country has ever gotten to vote on the issue of population replacement or the levels of migration that we get in. These are All of these things that are happening to us that we primarily spend our time complaining on and trying to raise the awareness of and try to make people see what where this will lead and what the consequence of this is, none of that has been done democratically. I mean, you pointed out earlier the democracy that we're getting, it's a lie, right? It's a farce. It's just something they say to us that we will think that we have any sway and say in the issue. But then the biggest issue in probably Western history of transforming the demographics is an area where we have zero say in. I mean, it's unbelievable. So we take a position where we want to change the policy of these policies, change the direction of these policies and stop them, implement policies that are beneficial to us instead of hurting us in this way. And for this, they call us violent. They call us, we don't go out and target single individuals or even individual groups inside of this, beyond those that are public and maybe advocate for these kinds of things. Those obviously deserve kind of a scorn, if you will, publicly, and it needs to be pointed out. But there's no ongoing harassment campaigns like the left does towards the right, where they actually target individuals for doxing, for being fired from their jobs, for losing their ability to accept payments online, et cetera, right? We actually just talk about, let's stop the immigration, let's change it, let's repatriate, let's talk about solutions to this issue, right? And so the defensive position, Greg, is one that they've managed to twist and change and into thinking the rest, the majority, into thinking that that's something bad, right? It's pretty amazing.
Yeah, Mark Potok in this documentary says, you know, the idea of an ethnostate is a prescription for genocide. Well, I'm sorry, actually, multiculturalism is a prescription for genocide. It's a prescription for genocide against whites. And then the movie cuts to a montage about the botched partition of India and Pakistan.
As an example.
Yeah. Yeah, doesn't talk about the successful partition of the Czechs and the Slovaks, right? Of course, even with the terrible upheavals and bloodshed of that botched partition of India and Pakistan, it still might have actually saved lives because of the enormous hatred between the Muslim and Hindu populations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, you know, India still has a very large and very restive Muslim population. They didn't get rid of enough of them, unfortunately. They should have ceded more territory so they had a more homogeneous Hindu society. So, yeah, the stuff that comes out of Potok's mouth is almost always just a complete inversion of the truth.
It's reversed.
And the man is just like a Pez dispenser spitting out these cliches, you know. Eugenics is a pseudoscience. It leads to Nazi genocide, you know. It's like, you know, I could write this guy's lines. I've heard this crap 1,000 times. But yeah, so they do twist this, though. We are the ones who are trying to stop violence, hatred, and genocide, and they're the ones claiming that we are the ones promoting it. It couldn't be a more shocking and cynical lie.
That's right. Yep. This is how they do it, right? And we've talked about other individuals too, obviously like the founder Maurice Dees and his ability to make a lot of money on this. It's kind of an industry on top of it, actually. Where a lot of gullible people donate a bunch of money to this organization because they're somehow going to stop this. But again, it's just about stopping white people fighting back against the genocide that they're being subjected to. That's their primary goal. So, what do you see in terms of moving forward from this? Because obviously, it is, as I said, in the short term, I think something which is very detrimental, and they have the capability and the way to do this, the pressure. And again, we're not 100% certain what groups it is, but you know, there's a bunch of usual suspects out there, so we gotta assume that it's the same usual suspects, right? But what do you see as a solution for you and for Countercurrents moving forward from here?
Well, really, this has been, how to put it, it's more of an opportunity than a crisis in the end. I've always been the kind of person who basically tries to find a way of turning everything to his advantage. And so that's what I'm working to do here. Countercurrents started out, the initial idea was to create a book publishing company that had a webzine as a sort of side project, but it rapidly reversed. And the main thing that we do, the main thing that adds value, is our webzine, and the book publishing is sort of a side project of that. Our book publishing is always basically just broken even. And the webzine, I think, is something that we can do successfully on our own. Now, of course, we're going to continue to keep our books in print, and we will sell more of them through the Countercurrents platform as Amazon deplatforms us. And other booksellers still have us available, like Barnes & Noble and so forth. But let's just say that the only place we can sell our books is through Countercurrents. We'll keep the existing titles in print, but I did sort of have a long-term plan of phasing out, bringing in new authors and new titles, and putting more of my time and capital towards producing just digital content, more audio and video stuff. So I now have a full-time person who's working with me to increase our video production and audio production, and that's going to continue. So I think that really this isn't going to harm us very much. It's going to create awareness of the manifesto. We've sold quite a lot of copies in the past few days because people found out about it and they want to get a hold of it. So that's good. And it's also basically hurrying along a process that I really wanted to undertake anyway. I was sort of dragging my feet on it because I had obligations, really, to get some books out for various authors. But in all honesty, I've said to these authors, I said, look, I can't pursue this book with you anymore, because what good is it to you to publish with Countercurrents if the world's biggest bookseller is closed to you? It just doesn't make any sense. And so I'm encouraging several authors just to look elsewhere. And that's allowing me to bring, sort of speed up the process of putting more of our effort into digital content, putting more effort into creating, upgrading, expanding the webzine, and doing more audio and visual work. That, I think, is going to increase our impact, and economically, I think we'll be just fine. Countercurrents is largely supported by donations, and I think we will continue to be doing that, and we will expand our support. So I'm fundamentally optimistic about Countercurrents. I don't think they're going to knock us off, knock us down just by basically deplatforming us from Amazon. It's just not going to happen.
No, it's obviously not enough. And again, the ridiculousness. I mean, I know that these people they do it for fun too. They take pleasure. I think they feel good morally, and they probably get some kind of high off of some power trip or something like that. They got one in there, kind of thing. But I don't know if they think or assume that this is going to cause people to just kind of go away or disappear. And as you said before, the fact that they are getting increasingly lazy, the establishment and the puppets that argue for their point of view and for their world as it is to continue are getting lazy in the sense that they don't get this opposition. We're getting sharper. We have to get smarter. We have to get more adaptive. There are many good aspects that come out of this, which causes us to being forced to outsmart these people in the long run. And I think that there's something to the Streisand effect as well, right? That we have to use that to our advantage. What is it that the establishment is trying to keep from us, right? And what's the reason for that? There's always going to be that allure and mystery around that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. It helps. It creates a mystique. And what we want is, I love these internet outrage campaigns, these meme campaigns and things like that. It's fun. It's really fun, and I want to get all the meme creators working away on this, coming up with some really funny memes. I've gotten a bunch of them sent to me, and if you send me a really good meme that I want to use, I'll send you a free paperback of the White Nationalist Manifesto. Hell, if you send me a lot of great memes, I'll send you any book you want. I've just begun to meme. Basically, I've got a huge folder of memes already, and I've only put I think a quarter of them up on Twitter, and on my Facebook things. So there's a ton of stuff already, and there's more in the works. I have a little brain trust of friends and creative people working on it. But you know, the online alt-right that emerged in 2015 and 2016, when it crested, was a kind of brain trust, a sort of distributed, largely anonymous brain trust of people interacting on the internet. And when they were tracking down Shia LaBeouf's Windu thing, using vapor trails or star positions or whatever, I forget.
Weaponized autism, my friend.
Could the CIA have done any better?
No, they wouldn't.
it's a brain trust. The movement at its best is a brain trust. It's an enormously creative movement. I would like people to get excited about this because, you know, there's no dweebier and more easily mocked person out there than Jeff Bezos. Come on.
Yeah.
And
cheating on his wife. Remember all that stuff that happened too? Went after some washed up. Was he a Mexican television host or something? Was she?
Yeah. What a strange guy. Yeah. But anyway, this weird little guy, the world's richest capitalist, will sell you the Communist Manifesto, but he won't sell you my manifesto.
Absolutely. Yep.
That in itself is just like a good little meme to get normies thinking. You know, tell your mom about that. Ask her, what do you think about that, Mom? She might actually think, well, there is something amiss here, right? So yeah, there's a lot of fun we can have with this. And YouTube and Facebook both have been accused, basically, of having radicalization algorithms, right? That built into the suggestion process is the potential for radicalizing people's ideas, because if they read Jerry Taylor, then they might be recommended to read Greg Johnson or Kevin McDonald or whatever. And the whole point of these anti, quote unquote, conspiracy theory changes at YouTube is to prevent this radicalization process, right? Well, let me tell you, there are a whole lot of ways that you can radicalize people. And one way you can radicalize people is you can go to normies and you can say, why is YouTube or Amazon trying to suppress certain pieces of literature? Why are they suppressing literature with names like the White Nationalist Manifesto, but not Black Nationalist or Jewish Nationalist Manifestos? That's a reasonable question.
It is.
And if people ask that reasonable question, the wrong person, and somebody jumps down their throat, some hysterical blue-haired SJW goes berserk, that's radicalizing, right? So they're going to try and get their virtual world algorithms to stop radicalizing people, and we're going to point out that fact, and we're going to use it to radicalize people in the real world. Every crisis they throw at us is an opportunity for us. It's an opportunity. It's an obstacle for us to surmount and turn to our advantage. And we're really, really good at doing that. So that's what we need to do.
We're clearly a thorn in their side. I mean, otherwise they wouldn't bother about this kind of stuff. You know what I mean? And
They're afraid.
They are afraid. And that's why they're doing that. I just want to bring this up too here, Greg, in terms of Chase Manhattan Bank, because that is now moving into the territory of limiting people's ability to use utility, right? A bank account, we're going to need, right? So I don't think that they're done here. I think that if they could, they would make us, obviously, as we know, They would make us and our children homeless and destitute and starving on the streets if they could, including, as I said, our children, who has nothing to do with the political choices or ideologies that we have made. You know what I mean? And so this is the environment, and these are the kinds of people we're up against. They're unscrupulous. They're backstabbers. They don't have any morals. They don't have any principles. They're not honorable. They have it correct that it is a war. But they are also, at the same time, we should point out, they are creating a lot of angry individuals. And if the tide ever turns, I don't think that people will be nice to these people. And same thing might happen to them at that point when things have begun shifting and people are tired and sick and fed up with this radical left-wing globalist narrative and cultural framework that we have right now.
Yeah, yeah. I think that, you know, these are the people who gave us the gulag. These are the people who gave us communism. We're dealing with truly evil people. They will use passive-aggressive and sneaky methods when they can, but they're capable of mass murder if they can do that too. And it's imperative that we stop them. So we will stop them. We're going to win because, again, fundamentally, there are a lot of trends on our side. The destructiveness of globalization is driving people in our direction. The destructiveness of multiculturalism is driving people in our direction. They will not let up on this stuff. They keep doubling down on this stuff, and that means they're going to continue recruiting people for us. And as we work our magic, fewer and fewer voters and citizens trust the establishment. And that means that the existing political establishment is going to start breaking down. It's losing legitimacy. So there are a lot of trends that are working in our favor. People moan about demographic trends being bad. And yeah, the demographic trends are really bad. But there are other trends that are working for us. And again, this is one reason why I think we can win. Again, they can shut us up. They can get us off the internet, but they're not going to stop multiculturalism from creating conflict. They're not going to stop globalization from creating conflict. And therefore, the tendencies that are feeding national populism are going to continue until national populism finally wins. And I will say one last thing, because then I have to get ready to go on a JF live stream soon. There's a really good book that I've been touting by Roger Eatwell and Matthew Goodwin. It's called National Populism, The Revolt Against Liberal Democracy. It's by two English left-wing political scientists, but they're left-wing anti-liberals. And they have a strong populist quality to their thinking. And they argue that the future is national populism, that globalization as a paradigm is dead. They do not foresee a future where globalization is hegemonic anymore. They think that the only way that the establishment will be able to defeat national populism is simply by adopting it. And that is a sea change in politics. I hope they're correct about that. I suspect that they are. And so there's a lot to sustain us through these little crises and deplatformings and so forth. History is fundamentally on our side. The left always likes to talk about, you know, the history's on their side. It's not. Nope. It's not. That's a delusion. History is on our side. The tendency is for peoples to want to separate and to assert their autonomy.
And live peacefully. And that's the big one, I think, because it's just too much chaos and instability that comes from people competing over resources and territory who are culturally and racially different in a small area, small geographical area. It's impossible.
People want to feel like they have a place that's their home. A homeland, not just a little apartment they can retreat to, but a homeland where wherever they go, they encounter people who speak their language, look like them, share their basic mindset, share community, and so forth. That's what people want. That's what national populism delivers. That's what globalization is taking away. Yep. People want that, and that's why we're going to win.
That's right. Thank you so much for joining us, Greg. Of course, you can find Greg at New Right America, or search for Countercurrents on Twitter. Also, of course, check out the website counter-currents.com, articles, and of course the books that are available. Are you planning on still selling them through the site?
Some of our books are gone out of print, but all the ones that are currently in print, we're going to keep selling through the website. Those will be available in perpetuity, I hope. But like I said, we are going to be, I think, shifting a little bit more towards digital rather than print media. That really is the wave of the future. I love books, but it's a bit old-fashioned and archaic in a way. Yeah. And like I said, it was something that we would do that basically broke even. But I think that I want to shift more time and more capital towards media that are having more of an impact. Because, you know, we need to put all of our effort into overthrowing this incredibly evil form of society that rules us. And, you know, everyone has to do their duty, and everyone has to do it to their utmost. And we just have to live more. I feel like this is forcing me to live a more focused and effective life. And that's a good thing. So yeah. Thanks, Heidi. Thanks.
Exactly.
Yeah, thanks, Jeff. You know, you're breeding ever more focused and effective and ruthless enemies.
They are. That's the thing. And these people are not going to go away. And they're going to be even more dedicated. And now they're going to have. This is personal now. You know what I mean?
Yeah, so, it's personal. Yeah. It's definitely personal.
All right, Greg. I'll let you go. Thank you so much for coming on. We'll stay in touch. And yeah, we should have you back for a follow-up show. And we can talk about some of the things we got to mention here but didn't go into in detail. So I'll stay in touch, okay?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, right. Definitely.
Awesome. Okay. Have a good one. Thanks, Greg.
You too. All right. Bye-bye.
Thank you so much for joining us today, ladies and gentlemen. Great having you here. We are going to be back here with more shortly. We have one show in the pipeline. We'll see if we get that up by tomorrow, Thursday. Alternatively, we'll get that up over the weekend here. But, of course, tune in to Flashback Friday, as usual, on Fridays, 5 p.m. Eastern. That's 11 p.m. Central European time. And then we do Weekend Warrior, as usual, at redicemembers.com, exclusive for our members. If you like our work, head on over there, sign up for a membership. Great way to support us as well. So thank you, everyone out there, for listening, for supporting us and what we do, and for continuing supporting people like Greg and so many others that does this important work of bringing attention to the issues of globalization and forced multiculturalism and everything else. But ladies and gentlemen, we'll wrap up there. We'll see you guys soon. We'll be back with more before you know it. Until then, take good care, and we'll talk to you soon.